Welcome to the Florida Creatives Podcast. My name is Ryan Price. I have been your host for this show for almost 4 years now to the day. It was almost exactly 4 years ago. I was sitting in my kitchen and gave a call to my friend John, and he just happened to be in the neighborhood, came over, and I said, "John, we need to put on a festival in Central Florida." And he said, "Oh, that's a really ambitious thing. What can you do in the time while you're planning?" I said, "Well, let's do happy hour." And that's really how this whole thing got started. And that particular John is on the phone with me right now, Mr. John Reif.
Hello, hello.
So,
good to catch up.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you were podcast number 2, and now we're on about 30 or so.
Awesome.
So yeah, it's been a long time since I've put one of these things out. This past year has made me very busy. I've been doing lots of traveling and teaching and driving around the state and stuff like that. So I have a house and, you know, a life now, I guess, a lot more than I did 4 years ago. So
responsibilities.
Yeah, you know, really good to have you on the phone. And you have so much stuff going on. You know, the big one, I think, is the Harvest Festival. But you're also currently at UCF at the visual language program, right?
Yeah, I'm in my last class, last term, last couple of hours to finish a master's in film and digital media at UCF. Good, really great program. I've enjoyed every minute of it. Didn't join it to, you know, get a job, just believe in that medium and wanted to have a bit more stake in the game than being an aficionado of putting video up on the web, I guess.
Well, and I think for you, you were saying, like, it was just... You almost need a reason to have to think through some of the stuff and gain some practical experience, and going to grad school like just seemed like the right path for you, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm doing a lot of it. I've been doing quite a bit freelance, and, you know, I was kind of early into the video blogging thing, and I just realized that there was a ton of stuff I didn't know, and especially from sort of a theoretical level. And I mean, some of the classes I've taken that were really mind-blowing, like we had a class called Ways of Seeing, and just the different way we, you know, create media for different audiences and different media even, you know, like take the same story and put it in a comic book or as a video game or as a short, you know, format film, and just that there are mechanics that, you know, we've become used to as the human race, if you will, as consumers of media. And to, you know, to not obey that is sometimes good because it breaks the boundaries. But for the most part, you know, I mean, when we look at architecture, for instance, the same ratios of height to width, et cetera, for columns and buildings has been around since, you know, the Greeks. And it's appealing to the human eye for some reason, and who knows why. But when you break those, sometimes breaking convention is good. But for the most part, you're pretty safe sticking to these things that have, you know, stood the test of time. So a lot of this program was getting away from what I thought was good and kind of understanding what, in broad strokes, was appealing to the human eye and to, you know, our taste, I guess, for media. And then now going back and, you know, pushing those boundaries rather than, you know, creating in a completely haphazard manner.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah. Definitely probably a lot that somebody could learn from you now just by sitting and having a cup of coffee. So if you ever see this guy around, you still wearing your beard? I have to say, I can't see
yeah,
you right now.
I think I'm the only one in Winter Park. Maybe the only one in Winter Park with a beard. But it makes it easy to meet someone at a Winter Park coffee shop and say, just look for the guy with the beard. So the wife digs it, so I don't have any excuse to cut it off yet.
Well, good. And yeah. And you have offspring now, right?
I have one who is 20 months old, a baby girl, and I have another one on the way due in April.
Oh, wow. That's news to me, so happy
yeah,
days.
It's news to, yeah, news to a lot of people. So we found out pretty recently. So
April, you're going to miss bar camp yet again, because that's probably normally
well,
when we're going to have
end of
those.
April, so we'll see.
Okay.
You know, I'll have to tell my wife to cross her legs and wait till bar camp's over.
Good.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's enough bullcrap. Tell us about this festival, because that's, I think that's probably your big project right now. Well, and And all the things that you've been doing, sort of what led you to the festival. So maybe you need to start, a year or 2 years ago when you really started your whole your local vor blog. What's your blog called?
Focus, Folkus. One of my first classes at UCF, I had the opportunity to do a documentary film, and that was the year, I think it was 2007. Webster's Dictionary had the word of the year was locavore, and I had no idea. I kind of had an idea of what it was because Cameron and I had taken this cross-country trip and done a lot of videoing and had come across people that were sort of into that, and there was a very popular book in Canada at the time that we picked up and read about trying to eat from within 100 miles of your house. And I just kind of got curious, and so I had to pick a topic, so I picked that, and I started asking around town if anyone was trying to do that, and what did the local food scene look like here. And really, it was just in its infancy. By the time I went to film was the second year VegFest was happening, and that sort of was an epicenter of sort of eating and living with a conscience, trying to understand where and how our food is produced and that sort of thing. Now, they were obviously looking at it from not wanting people to eat animal products, but it definitely was kind of in tow with what was sort of happening at national level. So I started to film and interviewed some people around town, and then I got very busy with my real estate business, and my wife had a baby. I sort of kind of came out of that scene. I mean, it was evolved for about 6 months, and then I just didn't really get to participate that much due to time. Cut to about a year ago, I started getting more involved again. The Audubon Park Community Market, which takes place Monday nights outside of Stardust, we made that a weekly habit, because I would have class late, and so I would come in, we'd grab some dinner there, and my wife and child would go home, and I'd, head off to class. So got to meet a lot of young farmers and entrepreneurs that were using locally sourced, food items in their recipes and in their products. And somewhere along the way, I stumbled across the book Slow Money. And for those of you that don't know what Slow Money is, it's sort of an outgrowth of a concept called Slow Food. And we have a very active Slow Food chapter in Orlando who are actually leaving tomorrow to head to Italy for an international food conference. Slow Food started as a backlash against the first McDonald's that was placed in Rome. This is in the 80s, and the locals were up in arms saying, we're going to lose our food culture, we're going to accept, cheap imitation tomatoes rather than the Roman tomatoes we grow in our backyards. And the whole concept of preserving a food culture really was birthed with that movement, or they at least put a label on it. And it's grown, internationally, and it's, been in America and sort of had its infancy in Alice Waters' restaurant, Chez Panisse, out west in California. And unfortunately, in America, it's definitely sort of been tapped as a, white tablecloth type thing. But the support of food culture, fair wages for farm workers and, sustainable practices for agriculture. And so Slow Money is a book that came along that basically said, well, let's take 1% of our risk capital. So let me take 1% of the money I would normally put into the stock market and instead invest it in the farmers and into the local food system, to sustain that and build capacity and that sort of thing. So,
and part of this is like a disaster preparedness thing. If tomorrow all of the coal and oil that's available in the world, stops being available, then we still have a way of feeding ourselves, for example. Right.
Right.
And that's, I mean, something that I hear a lot in association with, slow food and slow money is like, what if California were to fall into the sea? They would have big problems, but California also grows a lot of food. So, if they were to be completely cut off from the rest of the world, they'd probably still be a little bit okay. California's, way ahead of the rest of America in a lot of respects, in at least certain parts.
Yeah, I mean, I think definitely that. When I did the film in 2007, and then, of course, recently with the salmonella scare with egg distribution in the States, one of the big concerns, too, is there's a fiduciary responsibility between you and your local farmer. When I go to Tony Adams of Big World Provisions and buy, bacon that he's cured from Palmetto Creek Ranch, if I get sick, he knows I'm not buying from him again. And so there's this responsibility between farmer, producer, consumer that at a local level happens that just doesn't exist at a national level. You know, when we had a couple years ago spinach E. coli breakout, it's because all of the spinach in California is being washed in one big bathtub, essentially packaged up and sent across the country. Well, the farmers and the producers over in California, they're never going to see me face to face. So I'm just a number to them. And if I get sick, it's just running the odds. You know, they put their insurance out there and go, well, if people get sick, then we have insurance against the recall and we'll, redo. But, you're still going to go to Publix and buy your pre-washed spinach, or most consumers would. So the alternative then is to build capacity in our local food system so that that level of trust and that level of, also on the farmer side, then he knows that month after month, week after week, you're going to be there to buy his produce. Then it gives him the freedom to be able to develop varieties of, vegetables and produce that are more nutritious and are more to your liking and to the local, demand than what potentially he would be shipping out to other parts of the nation. So, California, they've got to be concerned about if that tomato comes off the vine, it's got to be able to look good and, manage to make it from California to Florida and ripen along the way. Where when I go to the Audubon Park Community Market, the stuff I pick up from the UCF Arboretum was picked that day and, placed delicately in a box and brought, directly to the market. So you're getting something that's picked at the peak of its nutritious value rather than, shipped across country or much less from, we get our asparagus in the wintertime from Argentina. So, it's covering a lot of miles.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who talk about, is quote unquote organic really more nutritious? And I think the argument from what you just said is probably not, because it's still grown, 2,000 miles from here. But, whether or not you can use the word organic, if you do use the word local, then you have some of those extra, benefits there, right?
That it came off the farm today. Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's a great book or a great movie that came out recently called What's Organic About Organic, and it covers a lot of that stuff. But, there's more to the equation than just getting the official organic stamp on your product. But, so all this really culminates in the fact that I read this book. I went up with Julie Norris of Dandelion Community Cafe and Michael Tiener of the Homegrown Co-op this summer up to Vermont to attend the second national gathering of Slow Money. And sort of the outgrowth of that was going, well, what do I do with my 1%? How do I invest my 1% in my community? And rather than spreading it all over the place to a bunch of little growers and producers, I was like, well, why don't I build the sandbox? So that was really how the Harvest Festival was born. Was there's been this great surge of grassroots efforts as it's concerned to our local food system. But I was, not aware that there was anything happening at sort of an institutional level or like a deep pocket foundational level. And to my surprise, when I started talking to my constituents in Winter Park, there were things happening. So the Winter Park Health Foundation had written a $150,000 grant for community gardens and, agriculture education type stuff in Winter Park, Maitland, and Eatonville. And I didn't even know about it. So, someone that I would consider myself pretty in the know, all of a sudden I'm, seeing this big grant that's, coming to fruition and a community garden going up in my neighborhood. And I didn't even, know this was happening. So I started to talk to those folks, and they didn't realize what was happening at a grassroots level. And I said, we've got some of the most influential and affluent people in Winter Park, and they're starting to catch wind of the importance of eating whole foods and eating locally. And our country club just had a farm to table dinner. It's catching on. So the whole hope of the Harvest Festival is to connect those two communities, is to connect the people with the, passion and the energy that have been doing this for 5 years at a grassroots level to the people with the deep pockets that want to empower those people, to change policy and to change the way we eat, et cetera. So, back in January, I started kind of, knocking on doors and quickly found a lot of support. And, I can go sort of into what the day looks like, but all that to say that both sides of the aisle, if you will, the grassroots and the deep roots are really embracing this and kind of looking at this as as the sandbox in which they can, you know, build their own little castles and learn to play nice and, you know, all work together.
Well, I think that's
To
one thing
affect
that's really
change.
interesting about like the Winter Park and Maitland communities is, you know, regardless of, you know, political beliefs or, you know, other social issues, they really want their community to be the best community it possibly can. And they really, really care about everything that goes on. It's a very civic-minded place. And it's something that I can't say for most of the rest of even the whole state right now, because so many people are transplants, or so many people believe they're leaving here in a few years. So it's the Winter Park is a great example of what could be in all of Florida, where a lot of people who are in Winter Park are transplants from, you know, 30 years ago or 60 years ago versus 2 years ago. So it's sort of like we have to catch up with Winter Park.
Well, you know, Winter Park does a lot of things well. You know, I mean, I don't know any other community that pulls up the concrete and puts brick roads back, but or makes it a priority to, you know, replant, you know, oak trees in a big way after storms. They do just a lot that happens right, and it took me a long time to realize that. I mean, I lived abroad, and it wasn't until really until I built a house in this community and went, this is my home, and I am at least old enough, you know, now in my 30s to affect change and not be considered, you know, some punk kid, that I realized I could, you know, invest in this way in my community, you know, and bring something to my community that I was passionate about and that I thought would have an influence and an impact. And, so it's been great, and it's been great to, you know, get to rally the troops, so to speak, and create something really new, unique in Winter Park.
Yeah. So tell us the details of the event, the dates, the websites, anything else that we need to know about.
Well, people can start at basically winterparkharvestfestival.com, and then we're also our handle, if you will, WP Harvest. That's our, you know, handle at Facebook, Flickr, YouTube, and we've got a pretty broad social media net. But you could start everything pretty much either at Facebook or on the website. The day of the event, it's Saturday, November 20th, and that is 5 days out from Thanksgiving. And one of the main focuses was to provide a venue for our local farmers to be able to sell a lot of their harvest, because, you know, they are, you know, busting at the seams at this point of the year. Like, they're kind of coming down to the end of their harvest and, you know, ready to prepare for winter. And that's, you know, that's why Thanksgiving, you know, traditionally takes place about this time, because there's plenty of stuff, you know, to choose from. So we'll have a wide variety of, you know, locally produced fruits, vegetables, you know, proteins. We've got some really, you know, wonderful cattle ranchers and pork raisers. I don't know if what you call them that, but people that provide lamb, et cetera, and folks like Wild Ocean that do, you know, locally caught fish from Titusville and shrimp, et cetera. So, you know, just trying to encourage local families to buy from the local farmers for Thanksgiving and really reconnect that, you know, supply chain, if you will, rather than people just depending on what they can pick up at the grocery store. I mean, if farmers know that they have this market every year, they can really prepare, you know, to meet demand of the people that would be looking for their Thanksgiving, you know, meals. We'll also have a lot of other, you know, like handcraft vendors and other creative types that are also part of what we're trying to support, which is, you know, just the creative and entrepreneurial types, kind of mom and pop, you know, establishments in town that are doing unique things and bringing, you know, a sense of variety to what is typically, you know, Orlando's really a big test bed for franchise, except that, you know, you're going to get the same thing no matter where you go. And it's kind of neat to have things that really reflect the flavor of the local community, and our mom and pops have a lot more flexibility of doing that than a franchise would. Past the market, we also, back in August, hatched this idea that, you know, community gardens typically have a limited number of space. So once those boxes are rented out for the season, other families can't participate. So we thought, well, how do we get community gardens into the hands of as many people that want to participate as possible? And we talked with this really great company out of St. Petersburg called GrowBox, and it's a portable, lightweight, mobile garden bed that looks like a terracotta pot, but it's actually, you know, composite plastic. It waters from the bottom. It's very Florida friendly, and you can grow literally anything. I had 6 foot high corn until a few days ago, until some raccoon or squirrel decided to go on a rampage. But you really can grow quite a wide variety of vegetables and fruits and stuff.
And John, so, how big is it?
Let's see, probably about 3 feet long by about a foot and a half wide, and you know, 2.5 feet up off the ground.
So yeah, I mean, even fully loaded, you can two people would be able to carry that anywhere.
Oh yeah,
right?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So the goal is hey, you can move it. So on November 20th, we're going to bring all the grow boxes together, and what started as 100 is now up to 400. Every school in Winter Park and Maitland, or public school, is participating, and they're we'll bring all those boxes together, and lots of members of local churches and other organizations are participating. So we'll build what I think, you know, from what little Google research I've done, is either the first or at least the largest mobile community garden of this type ever in history. And just a really cool way to showcase, you know, the people's interest in growing stuff again. I mean, we've sort of forgotten how to do that, that our lawns don't have to only be St. Augustine. You know, you can pull up some of that and plant something that's actually useful and beautiful. So, and if people want to learn how to do that, we have two tracks of seminars during the day. One is do-it-yourself gardening, everything from square foot gardening to composting, worm composting, growing with the seasons, that kind of stuff. And then the other track is more kind of top view, looking at what is our local food system like currently, you know, who are the players, how can you find local foods, from a health perspective, why is feeding your family with, you know, whole foods, you know, a better option? And then we, you know, at the same time, the market is also providing, you know, little sample size foods that are prepared from local foods, so kind of like what we call the taste of the harvest. So the they'll be able to, you know, create a dish that's, you know, spotlighting some local ingredient. People get the idea of like what we actually can provide this time of year. And the sort of the culmination of that, and the only part that requires a ticket, is the farm-to-table dinner that night, which starts at 7, and it's under a tent in Central Park, you know, beautifully decorated with fall foliage and bales of hay and whatever. And then we've got chefs from Ravenous Pig, Luma, Kay, Antonio's, Mito Mattia, Big World Provisions, Fatu and Casa. I mean, some of the best chefs in town preparing local food from some of my personally favorite farms and ranches and hydroponic gardens, et cetera. So really outstanding, you know, three hors d'oeuvre and five course dinner, and you know, wines by Tim's Wines, and we're trying to work out with a local vodka distiller to do a harvest themed, you know, cocktail. But we have music from bluegrass, some really great bluegrass bands, Jubal's Ken and Barnstorm, and then even during the day, just for free, people can come up and hear, you know, several of our local traditional folk bluegrass bands, you know, playing some really great tunes. The final part is that we have a neat group that's working together to create curriculum for the kids. So, you know, if a kid doesn't want to go sit through, you know, how to feed your family healthfully, they're going to have an opportunity to work with the Winter Park YMCA, ROC, Reducing Obesity in Children of Central Florida, and that woman who, Miss Holly, who owns Sweet, she was the winner of the Cupcake Wars Food Network. Well, she's very passionate about healthy eating for kids, and so she, ROC, and YMCA are working on kids' activities throughout the day. So it's really something for the whole family. I mean, it's, you know, beautiful weather this time of year. Simultaneous to this, there's a big thing called the Red Bag event on Park Avenue, where if you shop with these red bags, you get 20% off participating stores. So the whole area is going to be, you know, covered with people. We've partnered with Williams-Sonoma on Park Avenue, and they're going to be doing some cooking demonstrations part of our festival. And it's just neat. There's a lot of community support, and that was the goal, you know, was to create something unique that spotlighted our local farmers and our local food shed. And I think we've got a great program, you know, designed for this thing, and hopefully we'll be able to be do, do this festival for many years to come.
It sounds awesome, John. Really, like it must take you and your team. I'm sure you've got other people involved, just tons and tons of time. So, and clearly you care about this, and you've been telling a lot of people, because I can tell you're ready with all of your shtick. You've got it all down, so I'm sure you've been spreading the
Well,
good word all over town.
it's an easy thing to talk about. I've been passionate about it for, a lot of years, and so have a lot of other people. So, it really is sort of weird being the face for this festival. And granted, I was the one that, started writing the checks first, but there's so many other people that are involved. I mean, so many other organizations, from Simple Living Institute to, the ranchers that are around, to the market coordinators for Audubon, to, even the vendors that are lending a hand. We've got horticulture clubs and culinary students, and it's a really cool thing. Like, everyone's finding their little area of this thing to lend support, and it's wonderful because this is not John Rice's event. That's the last thing I'd want, because I don't have a stake in the game. I mean, I'm not a grower. I just like to eat good, wholesome food, and I just want it to continue to happen. And someone asked me, like, what was my inspiration? And I've attended events not identical to this, but similar, with a dinner that was locally sourced and stuff like that. And I just wanted to attend an event like this, and one did not exist in our area. So I had to, start convincing people that it should, and convince them to, help me and work with me to make this happen. So it's been cool. I mean, I got to meet the mayor of Winter Park. I talked to him and the mayor of Maitland, and while I could have probably done that through my real estate career, it's nice to be able to do it at a level that I'm passionate about, rather than for some business reason. I've been doing business in Winter Park for almost 12 years total, and I've never joined the Chamber of Commerce until now. And it's so wonderful to go to, like, a networking event and actually talk about something that I'm really passionate about, rather than going through the motions just to, put the next deal in the grinder. So, yeah, it's neat. I mean, it really, it kind of, it's like when I joined Florida Creatives, you started, I am a dabbler, in the digital media world, and get to meet some of these, truly creative, web designers and graphic designers and artists and, coders and whatever. It's so cool. I mean, it's so neat to be able to, meet folks that are really good at what they do. And that's what this festival has done. I mean, I've gotten to meet, incredible chefs that are at the top of their game, and, community organizers that are, doing it right, and civic leaders and whatever. And it's just wonderful to be able to sort of come of age and kind of get comfortable in my own skin, in my own city, and pull off something, hopefully that'll leave an indelible mark, and for the positive in our local food scene.
Well, I think even if you never did another one of these, you would be doing a huge service and leaving that very lasting mark on people, because hopefully their eyes are going to be opened, and see. Just like the thing I'm thinking about right now is 4 years ago, that very first Blog Orlando, when so many people who live here or had some roots here sort of met each other for the first time. And there's people like Eric Hirschman and Chris Scott and Alex Redloff and you and I and Josh and all these people, and we didn't know each other from the next guy standing in the room, but that was that, like, for whatever reason, that event was very catalyzing, and it started a whole bunch of other things being put into motion.
Yeah, well, I agree. Gosh, this kid, be remembered as a Blog Orlando type, event. Boy, it would really be a home run. And I hope that people that are involved in food at whatever level come away having met all sorts of other folks that are involved in it, and they just never knew they were there. That their circle just never happened to cross. Because I think that's, I mean, I felt like all of us, in the digital media scene, we're, doing our own thing, our podcasts or video podcasts ever, and just didn't know that the rest existed. And it was like the best meetup.com event, ever, like, to get to brush shoulders with people and meet in a casual way. So that would be a great legacy for this festival to, be under the auspices of that sort of, remembered in that sort of way.
Yeah, I mean, that's my wish for you. So And I will definitely, if you've got, volunteers, is there some place where people can sign up to help out for that, or are you guys
Yeah,
covered, or
definitely.
what?
There's a lot of information on the website. So there's a volunteer page, and there are a ton of different ways that you can be involved. All you have to do is just send me, email through the contact page, and we will point you in the right direction and get you involved. And really, at whatever level. I mean, there's some people that literally just go around and look, or are just online looking for new farmers that we don't know about to try to, help them be aware that this is happening. To people that are finding resources for us to share with our audience, how to do container gardening and online resources to, helping us plan how to pick up the grow boxes and deliver them to the site. And I'm with Rollins College students to design the whole layout for the festival. And so there's a ton of ways to be involved, and really with lots of time or as little time as you want to give to it. So definitely encourage people to drop the volunteer page on the website.
Awesome. Awesome. So, I got one more question for you, John. It's just something that came up. I just happened to be sitting in Stardust one day, and all these people walk in, and they're from the Congress for New Urbanism. Have you heard of this meetup?
No, it sounds intriguing.
Yeah, so a lot of people there are, they're like city planners and architecture students and people who, write policy, or they, revise it, and whatever it is that they do, that people who spend their time reading and writing and changing the regulations about, how the sidewalks get paved and how the green spaces get managed, and people who are developers. So there was a guy from the original Baldwin Park project, and he talked about some of the other, like these places where they just sort of take over a section of town that nobody's using and turn it into a community. And they're all looking at what's their job going to look like in 10 years, because it's not going to be what it has been for the last, 50, 60 years. So it was something that I just stumbled across, and I thought, like, there are people out there in my network who need to know about this. And it's called the Congress for New Urbanism, and I will definitely put a link to their website in the show notes, as
Yeah,
well
cool.
as to the Winter Park Harvest Festival and all of your places online and details about the event. And is there anything else that you want to plug before we're finished here?
No, man, just glad to, reconnect with you, and very excited about the Urban Rethink project, and looking forward to hearing what name everyone comes up with, and excited to see a new space, a new place for creatives and folks that want to call downtown Orlando home and add to the great flavor that's happening down there. So glad for all the things you're doing in the community as well, sir.
Oh yeah, we'll have to do a urban rethink probably in a week or two, once some things land. The construction's going on right now, and if anybody's talked to me recently, they've heard me talking about it. It's been a big project since March, at least
Right.
for me. So we'll see the culmination of some of that work starting to come out really soon. Just since it is the day of a happy hour, I'm thinking about the next couple of happy hours. November 15th, 2010 will be our next happy hour, and it's always a Monday. It's always at Crooked Bayou. It always starts at 6 o'clock, and then the next one after that will be December 20th, and that will actually be our 4-year anniversary.
Ooh.
So we always try to do a little something special, cookies and, get people to come and tell stories about, what they've gotten out of the group in the last 4 years, and who they've met, and some of the relationships and projects that have resulted from the group. And hopefully we'll get some people posting stuff for that for the 4-year anniversary. And so every third Monday in Orlando, and every third Thursday in the Melbourne, Brevard, Cocoa area, we have happy hours, and looking for other people to start them in other parts of the state. We've got our groups on Facebook, on LinkedIn, with all of them have about dozens of people, for 9 different sections of the state, sort of based around some of the bigger cities and metro areas. If you see one there that you would like to create a new group, it's pretty easy to do, and just get in touch with me. I'll help you get one started. And also for the podcast, if anybody's interested in seeing more of these podcasts happen, you are completely welcome to record one. If you want help with that, I will help you with that. But if you see an interesting subject, this is me giving you permission to make a Florida Creatives podcast, video, audio, do an email interview with somebody and post it to the site. Everybody on the site who is a registered member has the same posting permission as the next person. There are a few people that are moderators who can delete comments and mark things as spam. And if you want to be a moderator, let me know, and we'll get you set up. So that's my call to action for Florida Creatives right now.
Do
And
it. Do it.
if you do volunteer for John's festival, let me know because I think it would be interesting to track how many people sort of like got involved because they heard this.
Yeah.
So we'll have a podcast page for this. Just leave a comment at the bottom and say, hey, thanks for posting this. I got involved. I found out something that I didn't know before. Or maybe you did have heard about it before, but this was the thing that sort of like put you over the top and said, I have to get involved with this event. So we'd love to see that happen.
Excellent. Thank you, sir. It was a pleasure catching up.
Yeah, John. And definitely hope you feel better. Good luck with graduating and definitely good luck with your event.
Thanks a lot, man. I appreciate your time. Glad to get to share the message.
Yeah. Thanks for
All
listening
right.
to the Florida Creatives Podcast, and make sure that if you haven't subscribed yet, you subscribe. We have listings in iTunes, Miro, probably Google Reader, other places you can do that, and leave us a review because we need other people to know that this is something worthwhile. So, thanks everybody.